You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, Astros are rained out today. If you haven't heard, thunderstorms in the south side of Chicago. That game has been postponed until tomorrow. It will start at 1:07 tomorrow, by the way, so we'll get out of the way of the pregame show, which begins at 12:30. So you get 30 minutes of the Killer Bees tomorrow on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, before we make way for Game 4 of the American League Division Series. Astros leading the White Sox 2-1. Good thing or bad thing that today was a rainout for the Astros?
You know what? I contemplated that. I thought it would be better for the Astros. I think that they were still set up. I think that the Sox were trying to figure out their starters still, and they weren't confident, and you didn't know what you were going to get in Rondon. No matter what he gave you, he wasn't going to be his regular self. Whereas Urquidy was a guy that's been solid. If it's not for his shoulder injury, and this last time he bounced back from it, he's looked like he's been very good, that I still felt confident that it sets up beautifully. And the last thing that the White Sox want in a Game 5 is to have to face put Lance Lynn out there again, so they were still scrambling. This gives them an extra day of rest, so they have other options. I thought it would have been better for the Astros to play the game today.
I'm on the other side of it. The White Sox have already announced that they're going to stick with Rodon in Game 4 tomorrow, because why would they go Lance Lynn? And they haven't announced a Game 5 starter, but there's no way they're going to pitch Lynn over Giolito if Game 5 is necessary. For the Astros, I think it kind of works out like a timeout in basketball. Like, you know, when the other team's on a run and you take the timeout to slow down the momentum, just to kind of slow the game down, let it breathe a bit. I think the rainout today kind of works in that way, because the White Sox were feeling themselves after that win yesterday. They were cocky. They were arrogant. Sox in five. The crowd was rowdy. The crowd was hot. And then when you had such a quick turnaround, late game last night, ended around midnight, you're going to play again today, you can kind of not really have that respite of that momentum. I think this kind of slows it down a little bit, which I think is good for the Astros. It's kind of like a puncher, like a boxer, too. When they get hit by a pretty good punch, they're a little wobbly there for a little bit. This gives them a chance to regroup, gives them a chance to read Tapera's comments. Not that it's going to affect the game at all. And it also gives Dusty Baker an option now. Lance McCullers on normal rest tomorrow. And then, if necessary, Fromber in Game 5. Urquidy could still pitch in Game 5, too. Or do you just keep the status quo, go with Urquidy tomorrow in Game 4? He was supposed to be today's starter. And then, if necessary, you have Lance McCullers waiting in the wings for Game 5 at home. Because that's the question right now. Who does Dusty throw tomorrow? He was asked in his press conference earlier today. He says they're not willing to commit to a starter just yet.
To me, I think you're rushing it. It's almost like you're panicking when you don't have to, because you're still in a position of strength up 2-1 to force McCullers in there and not see Urquidy at all. I think that, you know, it's hard to say for me one way or another, because McCullers has changed his splits. One year he was bad at home. The next year he was good at home. This year he was just really, really a much better pitcher overall. But I just feel like Lance is more comfortable at home. Urquidy seems like, no matter what situation you put him in, he's the same. He's another one of those even-keel guys. I would still go with Urquidy tomorrow. And if you have to, you have other guys that can, you know, pick up the slack and fill the void. But I think that at least you know that I'm going with my guy on his home turf, where he pitched game one and pitched really, really well, and I'm going to try to do it again, as opposed to, no, Lance, let's change the plan, because mentally you're already setting yourself up for, I'm pitching game five if necessary. And suddenly you reshuffle the deck and go, Lance, upon further discussion, I want you to throw in Chicago, different climate, different conditions, different familiarity for you, and I want you to, you know, be ready to do that instead. I don't like that.
I think I stick with what I have too. I took a long time to kind of think about this, and I was going back and forth, I'll be honest with you. In Houston, what do you think? 713-780-ESPN. Do you go Lance McCullers tomorrow on normal rest in Chicago? 713-780-3776. Look, this lineup that the White Sox have too, it's heavy with the righties, right? Their best offensive players are right-handed. Tim Anderson, Jose Abreu, Luis Robert. Most of the best hitters on this team are right-handed. And then Yasmani Grandal is a switch hitter, so that's kind of neutralized there with a lefty and a righty, although his numbers are better one way than the other. So I think Urquidy, just stick with it. You know, he was preparing for this start. He wasn't even in the bullpen yesterday. He was sitting in the dugout, so that was never really an option for Dusty Baker, not that it should have been. I'm with you. I go Urquidy in game four, and then if necessary, Lance McCullers pitches in game five. I've had people kind of pose this question on Twitter, too, and people are like, get it done right now. Go with Lance McCullers. You got to go with your ace, and I get that logic. And then I have other people that are like, no, save him for the ALCS. I will say this. You shouldn't be thinking about the ALCS at all when making this decision. If the ALCS comes into mind whenever Dusty Baker's making the decision, he's failing his team. That should not be part of the thought process. I just want Urquidy to get a start against this right-hand dominant lineup.
I don't blame you for thinking that, too, because I think it all factors in. But I think that you're sitting in a position of strength, but you're acting like you're playing from behind. And that's what I don't like, because you're changing the game plan on the fly and telling pitchers when they were setting themselves up to pitch on certain days and certain games to suddenly do it a different way. And now they have to make adjustments, and everybody in the clubhouse is making adjustments. And I think that that's more of a panic move by a team that's down a game in the series as opposed to the team that's up 2-1.
Flimsy saying on a twitch.tv/ESPN975, no to Lance McCullers in game four. It's not technically a must win. I think it's a good point. Like, if you were down 2-1 in the series, then I could see that flip switch a little bit, because now game four is a must win. You don't want to leave your best player, you know, in the bullpen or in the dugout or whatever. You want to give them that start. But you lead 2-1. See if Urquidy can get the deal done. And if not, you have Lance McCullers at home in game five. Not a bad guy waiting in the wings for the Houston Astros. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chris, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys. Been a big fan of you guys since you started the radio show just a couple months back. Appreciate you guys being on the radio. Love to listen to you guys for the week.
Thank you for the kind words, Chris.
Yeah, no problem. My opinion on who should start game four, I think we should just stick with the game plan that we have with Urquidy, because as you can see, you know, game one, McCullers was just lights out. I loved seeing him pitching in that game. He was amazing that game. You know, the Astros are pretty much the better team at home. And, you know, I feel like if we put McCullers out there on a road team where he's not very well situated on the road rather than what he does at home, I think it's just best we stick with Urquidy. And I just also wanted to get you guys, I don't know if you guys already discussed this or not, but if you had heard the words about what the White Sox pitcher Tapera has said about us during game one and two, what he's accused of us. I don't know if you guys have heard that or not.
Yeah, we covered that part of it.
Appreciate the call, Chris. And yeah, my stance on Tapera is just that you have this guy who just had a decent outing in a playoff game to avoid elimination, to salvage a victory in a five-game series. And you start running your mouth a little bit. You know, he's a Houston kid, too, so it surprises me a bit. He went to same Houston State, played his high school ball at Brazoswood. So a little surprised that he made those arrogant comments about the Houston Astros. But, you know, it kind of is what it is. Dusty Baker, in response to it, said, I didn't know who the kid was until we were playing the White Sox. Alex Bregman said, oh, yeah, they had some great pitching yesterday as they allowed us to score six runs. I just think it adds fuel to the fire. I think that this is a series. Like, any
this
playoff
bulletin
series.
Board material, no matter what. You finally got a win in the series. You finally broke out and put some runs on the board. And this is what you want to do? You want to motivate and light a fire under the ass even more of the team that's up 2-1 that has been dominant, with the exception of all the fluky things that happened last night. And, you know, look, they were bound to determine at some point to have a little bit of a down evening. But the fact that up until the fifth inning, the start of the fifth inning, they were answering every bell. They answered it from the get-go when Anderson scored the first run of the game for the White Sox. They bounced back there. They went up 4-5-1. Mm-hmm. Even when they went down 6-5, they answered to tie that. They did everything you could have asked for from this ball club. But the one thing that they don't need is to be motivated with a little extra. You just provided that to them, Mr. No-Name Pitcher from Houston. And so now you've done what you, the rest of your teammates probably in quiet went, you know, we probably didn't need to do that.
I think bulletin board material is overrated for the most part, but why do it, right? Why throw that fuel on the fire? I think there's, like, any playoff series is going to get chippier and chippier as it goes on. You play the same team, you start to dislike guys, you hear things are said. I think tomorrow's going to be a heated game. Like, I don't know if anybody's going to be throwing at anybody intentionally. I think you might see some message pitches, a little high and tight, maybe inside. You might see some hard slides. You might see some talking and some chirping back and forth. But I'm looking forward to tomorrow. A lot of it's because of this drama that's going on, whether it's Tim Anderson yelling at Ryan Stanek for throwing him slider, 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 whether it's Tapera saying what he had to say. Martin Maldonado tweeted out earlier today, extra motivation's never bad. Dusty Baker saying he doesn't know who this kid is. I'm excited for this ball game tomorrow.
You should be, right?
We'll
if you're
have
an
it
Astros
right here.
Fan, you're still in charge, right? You're still in command of the series. You're up 2-1.
I am nervous, though.
I am too. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. And because I thought that, look, the easiest thing to do would have been the only team up 2-0 to put a quick end to the White Sox, send the message across baseball, we ain't going anywhere, and we still got work to do, and let the other three series just punch it out 1-1 and hope they all go a long way. And then you can reset your rotation, and you can go in with all your hitters hot, and your batting title, the champion, batting seventh last night, tells you all you need to know about 1 through 6 and the totality of this lineup. Jake Meyers, again, when he's called on early,
right?
No, and look, as much as I said, look, Chaz did some things in game two, but the fact of the matter is I still stick with what I said all along. That's your starting center fielder every single game of the playoffs, and so far he hasn't given me any reason to change my opinion. Your lineup is solid. Your starting pitching you could be in control of. I hated seeing that game get away last night.
I called yesterday's game the Tom Halligan game. He was the home plate umpire in yesterday's contest. Made a couple of plays that, to me, changed the scope of the game. The first one in the third inning when he missed strike three on Yasmani Grandal. Would have been a strike against Grandal. It would have been the second out of the inning. He would not have hit a two-run homer if the strike gets called by Tom Halligan. I felt like that home run got the game competitive again. You get out of that inning, it's 5-1. Totally different look the rest of the way and how Dusty uses his pitchers, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, the call in the fourth inning, the judgment call in the fourth inning, where the umpires, in their judgment, not a rule, in their judgment, felt that Yasmani Grandal did not interfere with Yuli Gurriel's throw to the plate. Ump scorecards on Twitter, they always audit the umpires and grade to see how they did. Halligan, if you can believe this, which I think is a testament to just how good umpires usually are, that you can nitpick this much and whenever an umpire is not doing a good job. Because Halligan, as you look around like other Major League Baseball umpires, didn't have a good game yesterday versus like everybody else. But he still got 93% of the strike calls correct. His consistency graded out to a 95%, which makes sense because he was giving in and out, but he wasn't giving low
up and down,
high.
Right.
But the overall favor in these Halligan missed calls goes to the White Sox favor at +1.23. This doesn't factor in the play in the fourth.
This is just balls and strikes.
This is just balls and strikes. It doesn't factor in the Grandal play in the fourth inning. His top three missed calls don't even include the Yasmani Grandal missed strike three in the third.
I said this to you in the break when this finally came out, when I was waiting for this to come out and looking at it going, that tells you all you need to know about. Look, it's easy to say that this is a stat that people can use, and you can, and the umpire scorecards have been great. But the fact that, you know, you look at this and say, well, that was a game changer because of the runs that were taken off the board if you give him the call that he should have gotten in that regard. And look, for you can say you like or dislike the announcers and the fact that two of them have ties to Chicago. One of them played the majority of his career there in Pruszynski. Adam Amin lives in Chicago, is the voice of the Bulls. I liked adding Wainwright. I didn't know who he was at first. I don't think they did an adequate job of introducing him, but I liked, again, kind of like Bagwell as that third voice to give you that opinion of a player and what they're going through their head. But I think when you look at it, the fact that that call was responsible for two runs and it didn't make this chart and it didn't make this pie graph and it didn't factor in, that to me says... You can try. I think in part this is making him look too good.
Well,
overall for the year is he's in the bottom 10% of all umpires in balls and strikes. That's not a good umpire. That's like when the NBA sets their referees for playoff games. You had to be rated at a certain degree for the season to be qualified for playoff games in the finals so that you avoid a situation like this.
Well, this isn't grading the top three impactful calls. These are like the biggest misses.
Oh, the most egregious.
Yeah,
from the strike
it's not
zone?
It's not okay. The most impactful right. call. It's the top three most
it just
egregious
says worst
misses.
Missed calls.
Yeah,
and that's what I take it as. Because, but better. I saw Angel Hernandez behind the plate the other night
see,
too.
They
have no business with Joe West, Angel Hernandez, or Tom Halligan types behind home plate in the most important games of the year.
You can take the tape of this show today, and you can probably argue what I'm about to say. I hate umpire bashing. I hate ref bashing. I don't think that most of the time they actually do influence the game. They might be a critical call. I don't know if it necessarily swings the game all the time. I can't remember bashing an umpire outside of like, oh, we missed that pitch. Like, that doesn't really count. Like, I'm talking about criticizing an umpire for totally swinging the way a game was determined yesterday. I think it happened in the third. I think it happened in the fourth inning on the strike call for Grandal and then the non-interference at the plate. I think the last time I really bashed an umpire was Joe West in 2018 on the fan interference play when Mookie Betts went into the outfield. Like, I don't bash umpires. I think it's easy to do. I think it's lazy. I don't think people realize how difficult that job really is. And most people that bash umpires and bash referees and officials, Like, you give them like an hour in that job, they'd be ready to quit, and they would have a totally different scope on what it's like to officiate that sport.
But as I told you, when we were talking about this, and look, what's the one guy with the initials? He's the last umpire that made no...
C.B. Buckner?
C.B. Buckner was a guy that, you know what, he had it out, whether you like
yeah.
for the Astros during the season, and he did it on multiple games where it became evident. The thing that I keep always going back to is, if we know them by name, like today, the only reason why anyone in Houston knows who Tom Hallion is because of his shortcomings yeah. in a game yesterday.
See, I agree with you, and the way that they determine who's like umpiring in the postseason, how they determine like who's umpires during the regular season, I hate the way that they do it. Like, I'd rather look at that and look at the system as opposed to like bashing an umpire for missing a called strike three. And I know today's show is a little bit of the exception there. Like, I hate how Major League Baseball's umpire union is so strong. They have such a strong union that once you have basically tenure as a Major League Baseball umpire, you can pick the day that you retire. You're good for life.
See, and that's the problem, because like even Blummer, I like the fact that Wainwright and even Przinsky were talking about missed calls going, well, he definitely didn't get that one right. Well,
right.
That definitely wasn't the right call. The fact that Blummer was on Twitter calling him Angel Hallion, that tells you all you need to know from a player's perspective.
That's fine.
Of, we shouldn't know his name. The reason why we do is because he wasn't doing his job effectively.
Which is why that should be looked at. Like, they should have a different terms of like, okay, let's promote minor league umpires. Let's get rid of the guys who are no longer performing. Like, the tenure that they have and how they can basically call whenever they're leaving the game as opposed to being fired from that job is something that needs to be looked at. And I'm not for bashing umpires, but whenever you're performing poorly and there's guys that are outperforming you that are in the minors, like, if you're a player, you're going to be cut.
Right.
And if you're a better minor league baseball player, you're going to be brought up. It should be the same way with umpires. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3777. Texans fans, were you hoping that the Texans won that game down the stretch? I'm curious what you think. That's next on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now I want to tell you about my good man, Dr. Linville. Dr. Linville has done a ton for people here at the station, including myself. I can't say enough good things about Doc Linville because he got my hair back. You know what? I had a hairline that went from a forehead to an eight head. I had ramps that I called them from, as I said, from playing baseball all those years. But look, I just had less coverage than I had in the front of my head. And Doc Linville said he could fix it, and he did. It is an easy, easy process. And the thing that convinced me the most was it's my own hair. It's just relocating some of the hair from the back and the sides and the places where it was really full to places where I needed more hair coverage. I got it. You will see the full results in about 6 to 9 months as the hair continues to grow and thicken. But you know what? He told me there's a 95% success rate. And you know what? It's already a success rate because I used to wear a hat every day, as you guys know. I feel really good about the fact that I could be comfortable just hanging out without a hat, just coming to work the way I am, knowing that I'm getting my hair back. It's a self-confidence thing. The fact that it's my own hair was big to me. It's a technical process called neo-grafting. And like I said, it's really strategically taking hair from other areas where you're very, very thick and putting it where you need more hair. And because you're an ESPN 97.5 listener, go to 975hair.com and you can set up a free consultation for ESPN listeners that normally costs $150. You can meet with Doc Linville and his staff. They'll tell you what they can do for you. It's up to you whether you do it or not. They have financing available, and they'll walk you through everything that they're going to do. But instead of paying $150 to figure out and hem and haw about whether you want to do it or not, it costs you nothing. It's your decision with nothing influencing you like getting that $150 at the first time you sit down and meet with them. Literally, I felt no pain when I did mine. There's supposed to be pain, minimal pain and swelling when the next day. I didn't have any of that. I didn't have to take any of the meds. You may be slightly different, but the fact that you need to know is it's not going to be a painful process, and it's going to be a benefit in the end because it gets your own hair back, and it looks great. Check them out today. Again, 975hair.com. See my good friend, Doc Linville.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, so the Texans lose yesterday to the Patriots, embracing the suck.
Yeah!
Energy pretty empty, huh?
Yeah, that's, I mean, and that's always another one of those hot buttons for Houston people. But look, I think the most impressive thing to me are the people that are still owning this. You get rid of Easterby, you got rid of O'Brien, but until Easterby goes, until we really see that you know what you're doing, I'm out. I give them credit. I thought after week one and the win, people were jumping back on hard. But evidently, so far, not so good.
Did you see that picture of Easterby right behind Cully?
Yeah, kind of sitting on a chair on the sideline.
I don't think he was sitting on a chair. He was squatting.
Yeah, and he kept looking up at him like to watch every move. He looks like just like a fanboy.
That's what he is.
His head looks like a light bulb.
Sure.
He annoys me.
I think the picture's drawing a little bit too much criticism, to be honest. Like, it's stuff like that bothers me, too. Like, whenever he's giving high fives to the players and whenever Charles Mayhew
pulling in Caserio,
trying to get Caserio game
get in
ball
the shot.
After week
we need
one.
You in here. No, you don't.
Like, a Mayhew thanking the three guys, like the triad of the Houston Texans, Easterby, Cully, and Caserio. Like, that stuff bothers me. Him being on the sideline really doesn't. Like, as long as you're not interfering with the players. Like, there's a bunch of people on a sideline at game day. There's less in the NFL than there are in college. But, like, just stay out of the way. Like, the meddling's the thing that drives me crazy. I don't care if he's on the sideline. Just do not meddle with what Cully is doing. Do not meddle with what Caserio is doing. Like, go be the team chaplain.
Right,
go be the psychology guy that helps guys out mentally. Stop trying to interfere in football-related matters.
See, I'm just going to give you this as information. I'm not going to take a side on this. I'll let you be the guy that determines if it's cool or not or if it's the right thing to do or not,
all right?
But I've lived through it, right? So, Tad Brown is the CEO. At the time, Rafael Stone is the legal counsel. Okay? They had the Toyota Center building people build them a locker room adjacent to the Rockets locker room so that they would shower and hang out and have their lockers right by the players.
Yeah.
Then, pre-game, before the doors opened, when the guys were up there getting shots out on the floor and everything like that, they would wear the same shorts and t-shirts and dry fit stuff as the players, and they would be on the floor getting shots up and being around the team when you have positions in the business office. Now, Carol Dawson was like, and we had closed circuit in our offices. So we'd see what's going on on the floor when the doors were going to open up. We're like, who's that? What? And it was happening consistently. At a certain point, that's the kind of thing where even the players are going like, why are they, I want to get shots up.
Get out of the way.
Yeah, I don't want, your ball hitting my ball, and I don't want you getting balls and getting shots, meaning I'm not getting as many shots up and all these other things. But it was part of the overall thing for them of the prestige of being able to say, I park where the players park. My locker is where the players' lockers are. I get to go out and shoot when the players are. It was almost like there were times they'd sit on the sidelines when they were done, when the doors were opening up, and they'd be disappointed if someone didn't ask them for their autograph.
See, I'm of the belief that if you're support staff in any way, and like you've seen it as director of broadcasting, I've seen it as a broadcaster, like it is players first. They're the first ones to eat. They're the first ones on the bus. They're the first ones on the play. It's always them first. You're secondary. You get the scraps. That's the way it should be. Yeah. So, yeah, that stuff bothers me.
I mean, I did games for 8 years. I traveled with the NBA for 20-some. And I'll tell you this. I never had a bit of sympathy for any one of my guys that said, I needed to get my food, and James Harden told me to move. Or, so-and-so said, on the way to the bus, they got a smoothie. I didn't. I don't care. You know what? Without them, there's no you.
Right.
On the flip side, without you, there's another you because they're still going to be them. And so you don't have a place to have a say-so. You should be just thanking your stars. You're getting some of the benefits of them being them.
Players first. Do you think Texans fans were rooting for the Texans down the stretch yesterday? Like, it was a close game. You get into the throes of a game. Like, sometimes it can be hard to look at the big picture approach. Do you think Texans fans were pulling for the Texans down the stretch?
I do, and I don't fault them for doing it because you know what? This team wants to win. This city wants winners. This city is conditioned to want to win. It's a hard pill to swallow that the best thing for your franchise right now is to lose. So I don't think that's something you can condition in and just like that flip a switch and say, yep, I'm in total lose mode now for this franchise. They've won too much over a long period of time. They've gotten their division titles. They've gotten into the playoffs. I don't think from a fan perspective, especially just the kind of everyday common fan that kind of casually keeps an eye on them. There's no doubt in my mind they wanted to win that game yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, they had played well. Davis Mills was outstanding in that game. They played good enough to win, just couldn't get it done there at the end. 713-780-3776. Texans fans, were you pulling for the Texans to get the victory down the stretch yesterday? 713-780-3776. When we return, we'll be joined by Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter, joins the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Poncho saying on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5, attendance 68,000 was listed as the attendance for the game yesterday when it was barely half full. Of course, that's paid attendance.
Yes.
Paid attendance a lot different. If you're selling the tickets, then who cares if they show up or not, right? You're still getting the gate. You're still getting the profit. But yeah, it didn't look very full. It also seemed very pro-Patriot, too. I was right about that stuff, wasn't I?
Well, it's hard.
Very pro-Patriot.
It's hard to say that when the colors are the same. So there was the
loud. Well, no, I was just talking about the loud. Like, I wasn't at the stadium, but the cheers. The cheers seemed more pro-Patriot.
I think more so because of the run that they went on from a dynasty winning perspective than it is the fan bases of the Cubs and the Braves and the, you know, the teams that travel, the Yankees that travel well on the road. I think because of all the winning for all the extended period of time, Patriots fans popped up all over the place.
True.
I believe that there's already a pretty good cross section here in Houston.
There is definitely a bandwagon Patriot fan. 713-780-3776. Your Packers were in a dogfight yesterday.
Oh,
they survived Cincinnati. They survived the Skyline Chili as they beat Cincy 25-22. Hey, a win is a win is a win is a win, right? Now 4-1 on the season. How does Mason Crosby still have a job today?
You know how he has? Because until he had the day he had yesterday, he had made 27 in a row. So, you know, the track record says I'm good and my team believes in me. But if they were waning on that belief, because here's the other thing. It's interesting because we were scrutinizing David Culley. The fact that Matt LaFleur, based on a replay, and I don't know where they could have seen differently, but they did. Randall Cobb caught a ball in traffic in overtime that should have been a first down.
It was close.
They did the review, so it was 4th and inches. If you really truly lost faith in Mason Crosby, no one would have faulted you if you had gone for it. But they put it in his foot one more time and said, go win it with a 50-yarder, and he did. So I'm sure David Culley's got that in his back pocket going, guys, it happened in the league yesterday, down the way a little bit. If you go to Cincinnati, they had done the same thing. That's the way we do business around here. We believe in our kicker. Well, he's got something at least that he could go to and say, well, they did it too. The only difference is Mason Crosby's resume as opposed to Kyahmi Fairbairn is night versus day.
Yeah, it was an interesting game. Neither team wanted to win. Cincinnati as well, they had a couple of field goals down the stretch. They couldn't get the job done, but the Packers hang on. They survive. They win.
You know how excruciating it is to sit through a doubleheader for 6-year-old girls in softball as it is? They don't even know what an out is.
Yeah,
and then know that I'm trying to, in between pitches and innings, trying to get on Lisa's phone to watch parts of the game and then have field goal miss after field goal miss after field goal miss.
Why aren't you watching it on your own phone?
Because she believes she's an Apple person. I was trying to watch it on my phone, and she believes that the picture on her phone, on an Apple phone, is much clearer and better. So instead of arguing with her, I was just like, okay, fine, then give me your phone. I just need something where I'm watching the game while I'm watching the softball. But then to try and drive home, to catch the end of it. And as I'm home, the only satellite feed I was getting was the Bengals radio. And we've used his audio before.
Yeah, Latham or something.
Some homer ex-player he made Dave South look like he got every detail. Oh, it was painful.
I like Dan Hoard too, so it's a little disappointing. All right, let's go out to the HRMP guest line, NFL Hall of Famer, Killer Bee himself, Howard Balzer, joining the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Howard, are the Cardinals the best team in the NFL?
I don't know if they really are. I mean, they're in the discussion right now. And because they're the only undefeated team, then, they're the best team. But, and, you know, everybody does all their power rankings and all that. But I'm sure if, you know, they played the Rams game, played the Rams again, and they will on Monday night in December, who knows, it might be a different outcome. If they played, now we're talking about the whole league, obviously, if they play Green Bay, play Dallas, play Buffalo, a lot of the good teams in the league. I think there's a lot of teams that are obviously pretty close to each other right now. And so, you know, we'll see how it plays out. A lot of games left. But, I mean, heck, they were taken to the mat yesterday by the 49ers going up against a very good defense. Their offense wasn't as explosive as it's been. The defense came up big on 4 fourth-down plays, which turned out basically to be the difference in the game. So, I mean, we all know, guys. I mean, this league is so close. And when you talk about, A, the top 10, you know, the top 5 to 10 teams in the league, how much difference is there really? But, you know, the Cardinals certainly are in the discussion right now, the way they're playing and playing with a lot of confidence.
So, Howard, what are we supposed to believe? The Chiefs and the bottom is falling out and the sky is falling and they're not going to turn it around? Or the upstart of the Cowboys and or the Chargers and teams that are, you know, showing you early in the season that maybe not predicted, but, oh, by the way, they got off to an ideal start. Like, who are real true believers and who are just still high achievers that are overachieving right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think I don't know if the Chargers might be overachieving somewhat, but this is a pretty good team at the end of last season. And with a quarterback who played very well, obviously, as a rookie, and you would expect to only improve, and it certainly looks like he is, and seeing what they are capable of. So I thought that they were a pretty good team that could certainly legitimately challenge to be second place in the division behind Kansas City. So I don't know what to make of the Chiefs right now. And they've played uncharacteristically on offense. And everyone's talking about the defense being so horrible, and obviously they've played poorly, but a certain amount of them playing poorly is because the offense hasn't played as well, which usually provides them with big leads. And when you have big leads, well, the other team you know is going to pass, and you know they can tee off on defense, and you pretty much know the other team is not going to run, and so you adjust your defense accordingly. When you're in close games or you're coming from behind, then it's different for your defense going against what the other team's offense can do. And so, you know, Buffalo surely is in the discussion as one of the best teams in the NFL. So I think we kind of have to wait it out with Kansas City, see if they can get right on offense, because they're not scoring as many points as normal. They're committing turnovers, which is very uncharacteristic. And the Cowboys, they're a pretty good team right now. Now, some would argue, well, they haven't played that many really good teams, which, okay, I can you know, go along with that. But hey, they were right there with Tampa Bay early in the season. So they, you know, with what they're capable of on offense, if the defense continues to just, you know, hang in there, play, you know, and continues to improve, I mean, they're doing this without DeMarcus Lawrence, one of their better defensive players, then they could be a factor. They definitely will be a factor for the rest of the year in the division. And then if they win the division with that offense and the players they have, I would think they could very well be a tough out in the postseason if they get there.
Yeah, I love what I see with Dallas. I think the defense is far improved. Micah Parsons has been a stud. People forget 2 years ago, the Dallas Cowboys, whenever Dak was healthy, that Kellen Moore had them as the number one offense in the NFL. I think Moore's kind of scheming around a banged-up offensive line right now. They're loaded at receiver. They have two really good running backs. I like that team a lot. I think the question, if you look long-term with the Cowboys, Howard Balzer, our guest NFL insider, is like, do they keep Kellen Moore and let Mike McCarthy go? Because Kellen Moore is kind of the brains behind the operation. I think that they might have a tough decision to make in the offseason.
It might be. It might be. And what, you know, he never predict what Jerry Jones will do. And so it's awful hard to make. If the Cowboys play really well and they do the things that we're talking about, as good as Kellen Moore is, that becomes a pretty tough spot to say, okay, we're going to make Kellen Moore the head coach, and Mike, thanks for the effort, but we're going to move on from you. If he's the head coach of a playoff team, then who knows, maybe even wins a couple games in the playoffs. And who knows? Well, they're probably not going to get a first-round bye because there's only one team that has a bye, so you would doubt that they'd have the best record in the NFC, but you never know. With the way these other divisions beat up on each other, that isn't out of the realm of possibility. So, but again, you can never predict what Jerry Jones will do, unless they would make Kellen Moore, you know, one of those head coach in waiting type of situations and say, hey, you're going to get the job whenever it is that we do move on. Because the one thing you always have to be careful of, guys, is when you're when you've been a successful coordinator. And of course, that doesn't mean a guy's going to be a good head coach. I think a lot of teams and owners fall into that trap. Oh, good coordinator, let's make him a head coach. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be the case. But be that as it may, the point is you have to be careful as a coordinator, and we know there's only 32 of these jobs, but if you don't go to the right situation, then all of a sudden no one loves you anymore. Howard, when if you're losing games, because the reason teams are looking for a coach is because they're pretty bad. So unless you have the right support staff and good personnel, evaluators and all that, then sometimes you can pick a wrong job. And I've seen times in the past, Mike Holmgren did it way back numerous years ago. There's been coaches who have not taken jobs, head coaching jobs, because they didn't think it was the right fit. And
Belichick
gave them the best
players
for success.
He was going there, and then he changed his mind because he knew that the scenario wasn't what he thought was going to be right for him.
Right, very uncomfortable that they had changed owners, and exactly. So there have been assistant coaches who have coordinators whoever who have done that in the past, and it's hard to do that. It's hard to pass up a head coaching job, but sometimes it is the best move unless you're truly, really comfortable not only with the owner but with the GM and everybody else in the organization.
Howard, it's obviously right there in your back pocket with the division, but the ramifications of Russell Wilson. Seattle off to a good start. Seattle is always dangerous, especially at home, but with Metcalf and some of the weapons that they had, it looked like Seattle was going to be in contention for the division now all season. Now you're looking to just try and stay afloat with Geno Smith when maybe up to 2 months Russell Wilson is out. Is this beginning of the end in Seattle for Russ? Because he already in the offseason was saying they haven't done enough for me. But now at this point in his career, is it the organization that steps up going, there's some uncertainty there. Maybe this is the time that we make the break.
It could very well be. And a lot could depend on what happens the rest of the way. And here's a crazy thing. Geno Smith did a pretty good job coming into that game cold. And that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be able to duplicate that when you're the starter and you are expected and you go through all the preparation and all that, but you're more prepared to play in those situations. And the Seahawks' schedule in these next several weeks isn't that difficult, but they've got to win games. I mean, they're already three games behind the Cardinals and two behind the Rams in the division. And so, but if Geno Smith can keep the ship righted, then Wilson does come back, and then who knows? Who knows what happens down the road? If they like what they've seen of Geno Smith, do they actually think that they could move on with him and then bring in another young guy to groom? You never know. I mean, in this league, you never know what a team is going to do. But he's had, obviously, a successful career there, and with what he has done, this will be 149 consecutive games he started, plus another 16 in the postseason. That's pretty hard for someone else to even come close to, much less duplicate. So, I think that's going to be a very interesting scenario to see how it plays out the rest of the year and then what happens when the season's over.
Before we let you go, we got to get one Texans question in there. But, overall, people are debating whether they, are you happy they lost or are you disappointed they didn't? Davis Mills finally has a coming out party after, just an unbearable set of circumstances that thrust him into that job. But now as you go forward from Caserio to Cully and the fact that now he's getting Bill O'Brien grades in terms of his ability to make coaching decisions, and then with a rookie quarterback, from a national perspective, the Texans going in the right direction, but what do you see in Houston?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, the question is, are they going in the right direction? And, we saw Caserio take out the Patriots' blueprint somewhat, what they did back in the beginning when they signed just a whole slew of veteran guys to one-year deals, prove-it deals and all that, and just hope that a bunch of them would play well. And a lot of them did for the Patriots as they built that team. But obviously they ended up with the quarterback they probably didn't know they had, who ended up doing it for him for two decades. So that's the big question, is they could be in the right direction, but is Davis Mills the guy that you're going to build it around at quarterback? I mean, I don't know if they even know that answer yet. If they think he's the guy, then obviously you get the best players you can around him and then find out if Cully can be a coach. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we what a week-to-week league this is and how everyone tries to make instant evaluations. But I laugh when I saw some odds this morning that right now Cliff Kingsbury is the second favorite to be coach of the year, when before the season started, he was third on the odds to be the coach most likely to be fired. So what does that tell you about how quickly things can change in either direction for anyone? So I think there's a lot of soul searching and a lot of evaluation that the Texans have to do to figure out what are they and what are they going to be going forward. And I think we're we're far away from really knowing that answer.
Yeah, have to take some time and see. You're right. I mean, things happen quickly in the NFL. Howard, thanks for moving it up a day, fitting it into our schedule. Certainly appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
The latest Killer Bee, Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter, joining us on the HR&P guest line. Coming up next, look ahead at this Monday night football game and some of the other games around Major League Baseball coming up today as well. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Apollo Men's Health. Look, Dr. O is the guy that can get you pointed in the right direction in so many ways. And the reason why I know that is because he used to work at all those other clinics. He knows what works, what doesn't, what's a waste of time and a waste of money. And now that he owns two clinics near downtown Houston, he knows that he can eliminate all the minutiae with those things that don't help you but cost you money or can keep you, like, delayed in getting the results that you want when you're trying to take care of your health. Your health is your wealth. Invest in yourself. Contact the people at Apollo Men's Health and see what they can do for you. It's as simple as going to apollomh.com and booking a first appointment, which you're going to find out most major insurance covers it. It discounts from military personnel and first responders. And on top of that, it starts the process rolling. And then you identify by answering some tough questions with honest answers what you're trying to achieve, and they put you on a program that works. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, they have answers if you have questions. They've got a program that's going to get you results. They can get you feeling like you felt in your 20s again when you thought that those days were far behind you. It starts with that sit-down analysis. It starts with the fact that if you want to work out, the best thing to do is get on a full body composition analysis. Literally only takes minutes. It gives you a complete set of results that you can build on and monitor as you continue your progress. You want to recover quicker? There's HGH peptide therapy. And for overall energy, there's nothing like all the different ways from B12 shots to hormone therapy for men and women. They can get you feeling better than you have in years. They are good people doing great things. You mentioned my name, Joel Blank. Get that B12 shot for free on that first visit. But they're going to take care of you every step of the way. I go there weekly. You should check them out, too. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit InnovationMap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, Monday Night Football tonight. Major League Baseball game's going on now. Braves leading the Brewers. And then every other game is being played today. Not the Astros and White Sox, though. They're enjoying the lovely day up. Hopefully get some Pequots up there in Chicago. Really good wings. Up
if
in
you
Chicago.
Go to Chicago for wings.
Well, they have deep dish pizza. It's a pizza place. It's a pizza place that also has wings. It's like going to Frankie's Italian Kitchen. You're going to get a side of wings with your pizza, aren't you? You
can.
Certainly are, because they're delicious.
But you can. But the options when you go to Chicago, from the steakhouses to the pizza places, that's the attraction, not the wings.
All right, Jake Asman.
You go to Buffalo, you get wings.
I've never been to Buffalo, but I do want to go Buffalo to watch watch the Bills Mafia and get the wings. Jake Asman joining us. Of course, he'll be on with the Wheelhouse 3-7. What was your stance on the Grindahl play in the fourth?
It basically allowed us to have a show today. You know, if the Astros win, or if the Astros, win that game, you know, we're doing a show today. And then I'm thinking, all right, well, the White Sox win, then we're not going to have a show. Then the weather happens. So I was watching this game just trying to figure out if I was going to work or not. So that was going through my mind as I'm watching this game. But as far as the play, I think the issue is the rule, not the actual play.
It's not a rule there.
Well, he didn't break any rule by doing what he
Correct.
Did. So I think it's a Major League Baseball issue that there's not a rule in place to call that interference. By the letter of the rule, right, you get like 45 feet of running before you...
Not on that play.
But like I was...
But the judgment...
That's only at first.
It's a judgment call. It's not a rule call. It's a judgment call if you feel like he tried to obstruct intentionally.
Dusty Baker called it a smart play. So, like, I mean, it's
Dusty didn't really know the rule either, because Dusty also mentioned the base path. And the base path rule is only whenever it's a throw to first base. So that's irrelevant.
Okay, well, the way Charlie explained it, because I went to him to try and get his take on it, is basically that Grandal is allowed 45 feet up the line, as long as he doesn't, you know, lean in with his shoulder.
Well, Charlie's not right there either, though, because the 45-foot rule never comes into play on a play at the plate. That's only on a play at first base. And the umpire, after the game, said that doesn't come into play on a throw to the plate.
So what's your take on it? They blew the call?
Grandal could be there. I mean, what he's saying, like Grandal is not illegally out of the baseline there. There is not a baseline because there's not a play on Grandal. So he can be where he's at. You can legally be where you're at and interfere with the throw if it's intentional and still be called out. So at that point, Grandal can be there legally. So he can't be called out because he's in an illegal spot. But if the umpire sees that there's intent that he went there with the intention to get hit by the ball, Gurriel's throw, you can call him out based on umpire judgment.
It's essentially like an obstruction.
So you think he should have been called out?
I thought so, yeah, absolutely.
I think the rule has to change, though, to your point. I think what I said during our show was all it takes is the camera angle from behind home plate to show, and the one angle that shows that whether he chicken winged it or not, that he saw the ball and he knew that, you know what, a savvy veteran move. I'm not taking away his baseball intelligence on the play if he gets away with it, and he did. But I think that, you know, if their intention is to get the plays called the right way, that altered the game by more than gamesmanship.
Yeah, I agree. Go back to the Rays and the Red Sox game, right? I mean, right. By rule,
that's
it's a ground rule double, but common sense would tell you, why are we benefiting the team, the outfielder, for screwing up?
Again, another judgment call. And again, that's right, because I mentioned it in passing. We had so much to get to Houston-wise, we didn't get to it. But in that situation as well, it's a judgment call by the umpire, and all you got to do is be able to go to a replay and say, by the time the ball hit Renfroe in the hip, the runner was already rounding third base. He's scoring no matter what. And as a judgment, you say, you go back to second, Kevin Kiermaier. However,
the run scores
right, as it justly should have scored.
Yeah. The only rule you need to know about the Grandal play is this. It's rule 509B.
Oh, you have the rule book.
A runner is out when he intentionally interferes with a thrown ball. Period. End of story. It doesn't say legally in the baseline. It doesn't say illegally in the baseline.
You can't say he interfered. You can't definitively say what he did was interference.
That's where it comes down to judgment. That's right. Umpire discretion. That's where it comes down to the umpire's discretion of the play.
And that's where I think the rules should be changed, where there should be, you should not be allowed to run in the grass on the baseline at any point. That's where the rule has to be changed. So I agree with your point.
It's not a point, it's a rule.
Well, I agree with how they implemented it because that's the rule, but that's my point about it should be changed so something like that does not happen in a playoff.
And I would say it should be reviewable.
Where are you on Tom Hellion, real quick?
He did not have a good game behind the plate. Do I think that's why the Astros lost? No, it didn't help. But
I don't think they lost because of him either.
If
but
he calls strike
three
to Grandal, it is 5-1, two outs in the third. The game looks far different.
There's obviously cases to be made that he significantly altered the outcome.
I get it. Don't walk
absolutely.
When you're up
0-2. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Walking Luis Robert when it was 0-2 is just as bad and as damning in that game for the Astros as anything that Hallion did in that game yesterday.
It's also the playoffs, right? So, I mean, like, these things are going to come up, and it's like, but if you're a great team, you'll overcome them.
That's also the other thing that I think that the league has to change when we talk about changing their rules and changing the ability to use replay. Change the ability to grade the officials the way the NBA does. If you're in the lower 10% of calling balls and strikes, you can be anywhere else umpiring on the diamond if you're needed, but you don't need to be behind the plate in the biggest games of the year.
Or robot ops. That'd be great because when we watch these games, the K-zone is infinitely more accurate than any of these.
No, no robo-zone.
Based on
no robo-zone, I hate
like
robo-zone.
I don't like the robo either because that little box has everybody brainwashed into believing that's the actual strike zone, and it's not based on the camera angles and the graphics.
I will roll the dice with the K-zone strike zone than Joe West or Andrew Hernandez strike zone any day of the week.
I'm gonna send you a YouTube of an independent league baseball player getting ejected for arguing with the robo zone. It's great. I don't think people would like the robo zone a whole lot. What do you have coming up on the wheelhouse?
We will do plenty of Astros today. Who benefits more from the rain delay today or the postponement, the Astros or the White Sox? We'll be all over the Texans and that debacle yesterday. What a day for Houston sports. We'll get to everything that happened in the NFL. College football, Aggies, what a weekend. BK's a Texas fan. My God, you lose to Oklahoma, then A&M beats Alabama. So we'll be all over that.
Cody, gear up and go at BK. Give him some hell.
All right, we'll be listening. It's going to do it for us. Thanks to Dell for doing all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Well, for half an hour. The Wheelhouse next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.